This is Major Hitt in the cockpit of the Enola McLuhan, flagship of the 7th Airborne Peace Corps and Lending Library.
Terrific!
This last week was like a total breakdown.
I'll be seen dead with a work of art.
For days, a fact was then translated into words of images. Those qualities, these forms combined facts, drag me upon the public places with.
Drop this jiggery pokery and talk straight turkey. The word is.
It goes without saying.
I'm not too old to say that it's just a phase.
There'll probably be some music, but we'll manage to find a quiet corner where we can talk.
Professor McLuhan is...
Our time is a time for crossing barriers, for erasing old categories, for probing around. When two seemingly disparate elements are imaginatively posed, put in apposition in new and unique ways, startling discoveries often result. Medium of our time,
electric circuitry,
profoundly involves men with one another. Information pours information instantaneously and information. As soon as information is acquired, very rapidly replaced by still newer information. Our electrically configured world has forced us to move from the habit of data classification. No longer modal passive recognition, block by block. We can no longer build serial, block by block, step by step, because instant communication ensures that all factors of the environment and of experience coexist in a state of active intellect. Active intellect.
There ain't no grammatical errors in a non-literate society.
All media work us over completely. They are so pervasive in their
personal,
political,
economic,
aesthetic,
psychological,
moral,
ethical,
and social consciousness that they leave no part of us untouched, unaffected, unaltered. The medium is the massage.
The medium is the massage.
Ile importante, give a him le secret massage, mamselle.
Oh, would you like a massage, Mr. Scones?
No.
Any understanding of social and cultural change is impossible without a knowledge of the way media work as environments.
Everything we do is music.
What you expect McLuhan will be doing once he's there next year or later this year?
We have, there's a friend of mine at Fordham who's on the faculty, and he's writing a booklet called What to Do Until McLuhan Comes. Yeah. Nice. We can't.
The French make a distinction.
I believe it. I really believe it.
For another program.
It's kind of incredible and things like that, because he's a very unlikely hero in many ways.
Until writing was invented, man lived in acoustic space, boundless, directionless, horizonless, in the dark of the mind, in the world of emotion, by primordial intuition, by terror. Speech is a social chart of this bog.
It's my turn. Pass me the talking stick.
There you go.
Guys,
yeah.
Men,
yo.
What other organ in your body has stood up for you like your dick?
Well, certainly not your heart.
Yeah, that organ gets broken when you're young. It breaks for good just before you die.
Right. It's not your liver. That wimp can't handle the massive amounts of alcohol you're drinking because you're depressed over neglecting your dick.
Yeah,
it's not your balls. I mean, they're important, but only as handmaidens to your dick. You know what Bly said? A pair of able-bodied seamen ready to pass the bucket. It's time to put out the fire.
Yeah, don't test for your brain because you have a brain. No, if you did, it would have been long ago to listen to your dick. And by now, you'd be living like swell, stiffing the rest of the world.
Hey, do you know the Academy of Urology announced that a daily wank reduces the onset of prostate cancer 40%?
Really?
No,
yeah.
Kidding.
You jerk not to listen to him and hands-on about it right away.
Your dick, your handle to success. Yeah, right. Our president is a total dick.
Oh, yeah.
His husband's been a dick.
I never thought of that.
That's right. Hey, give me the stick.
Yeah.
Now, is this the message? Stop, hide your dick in your pants?
Yeah. Right.
Unzip your trip, start hanging out with the Yang crowd?
Yeah, flag 4th of July. You know, hear the girls say, who's that patriotic prick?
It's your dick, thief. Your one eye on the world. Let it lead you around and take you into dark, mysterious places where few men dare to go.
Cut.
Schlong.
Schlong.
Dog.
Beanie.
Dork.
Pork. Or Mr. Johnson.
Yeah. Hey, whatever you call it, the end of the long pull. It's one straight friend you can't rub the wrong way.
Your dick. The member to remember.
Don't forget it.
That's the end of Get Truck Industries Human Resources Lesson 5, Pulling It Off as a Man.
Beats the hell out of agonizing the works.
For more information, go to firesigntheater.com, keyword, Lee Wank.
Okay, one more lesson and I'm back in the driver's seat. This could be a lot worse. Let's see.
The wrath of Achilles is my theme. That fatal wrath which, in fulfillment of the will of Zeus, brought the Achaeans so much suffering, and sent blunt souls of many noblemen to Hades, leaving their bodies as carrion for the dogs and passing birds. Let us begin, goddess of song, with the angry party that took place between Agamemnon, king of men, and the great Achilles, son of Peleus.
Sure the gods was it that made them quarrel.
Home from wherever Ricky found their Lucy, always Lucy. Without delay, the homecoming in two languages. Blue, and the cathode ray windows seen from the street. Seen from the street by people walking by without homecoming. Without home. Without Lucy. Chilled by blue light. Windows not coming. Homecoming in this place where the wanderers organize into industries and the industries sail like argonauts. And it's always one small step for man, one giant leap for wanderer. We're home, not coming. We are wanderers to the office and around the corner lunch, sitting next to face with blue-lit windows of winter, staring at the check, staring at the sky. Each wanderer an Odysseus, each Odysseus forgotten, each Odyssey forgotten. The Odysseus stares oddly, and he asks the only obvious question.
You talking to me? You talking to me? Talking to me? Well, who the hell are you talking to me? Well, I'm the only one here.
American wanderers. All islands. All with no home coming. Not like Odysseus, who revealed himself to his son Telemachus after 20 years, he said. Odysseus said, the wanderer said, in the words of Homer, poet, wanderers. No other Odysseus will ever come, for he and I are one. The same, his bitter fortune and his wanderings are mine. 20 years gone, and I'm back again on my own island. Telemachus began to weep. Salt tears rose from the wells of longing in both men, and cries burst from both as keen and fluttering as those of the great talon hawk, whose nestling farmers take before they fly. So helplessly they cried, pouring out tears, and might have gone on weeping so till sundown. Here, after 20 centuries, here in our time, after 20 centuries, we have Odysseus. He's the only one here. We just have no Homer.
At the close of Homer's Odyssey, Odysseus returns home after many years of adventures and discovers that only his dog Argos still recognizes him. Writing of this long-awaited reunion, anthropologist Lauren Isley writes The magic that gleams an instant between Argos and Odysseus is both the recognition of diversity and the need for affection across the ocean foam. It is nature's cry to homeless, far-wandering, insatiable man. Do not forget your brethren, nor the green wood for which ye sprang. To do so is to invite disaster.
In the beginning, there was no beginning. They made up begins later to prove to themselves that it was later. If every later had been a now, there would have been no excuse. Let me say right now that they have lied to us. They led us to believe that we are children only of time, that our stay, our dwelling time, this our world has been infinitesimal. See, they say, how much further we may go.
They say that we rose from and above the animals.
They lie. Animals are former friends to whom we no longer speak.
We chose not to speak. When the ram carried the high looping message which crackled with divine fire between his horns in the airless mystery of manifestation, and upon touching the pentacle grounded that fire, leaving the message split, perceivable, transferable.
Show me the myth, the legend, the superstition of any of the old people, which says, one day an ape stood up and said he was a man.
They have lied to us. They have told us not to listen to the old people, the old memories.
The word myth, judgment, a story to explain the sun. It is not true. The word legend, judgment, an unauthenticated story handed down by tradition. It is not true.
So there we were, all of us, and somebody said, hey, a bull has two horns. This vegetative, flowering, seasonal bull that we are and we live in and is standing right over there has two horns. Now the brothers, the North-South brothers who pummeled the divine message through the pentacle, theirs was not division. It was only two. As the ram and the bull had only carried the hint of two, the signal, as it were. And two, let's face it, is not a bad idea. The North-South war gods, crackling their fire, dancing through the earth, made two, connected, point to point and back again, and then white brother split to the east, and that made three. Man, his white brother in the east, and the promise between them, the promise that appeared and vanished like a holy ghost, that made three. And then one day, white brother forgot and became white man, and that made four, and that's where the trouble started. That remembrance, that holy remembrance, that recognition, that smile, that, hello, it's you again, is it? That never happened, that hasn't happened yet, now, could happen, any time now. 1 second from now, past and always here, the effort, the tiny effort, look at him and say, hello, it's you again, is it? Again, again, say hello again and we can stop messing around and get on with it. It hasn't happened yet. White man, red brother, the promise remembered and the promise forgotten, that made four. Welcome, crab. Goodbye, Fellegi.
A little fragment of how navigation is done on this island in the Carolines, which is done entirely by dead reckoning, which means that one's position at any time, is determined solely on the basis of distance and direction traveled since leaving the last known location. Put the other way around, it means that if you lose track of how far you have come from where you were, you are lost. In contrast to this, Western celestial navigation, LORAN, and other techniques make it possible to establish a precise position without any knowledge of where you have been, except in the most general sense of knowing what part of the world you are in.
That's a whole other system.
It's based on knowing where you've been. Yeah, knowing right. where you've
you know
been.
What that comes from? And the all Western systems are based on basically on writing it down. That is some table, some chart of information already acquired, some computer system basically, whether it uses a computer or not, something that computes for you where you are. Mm-hmm. You yourself do not actually know. You
it's
ask
automatic.
A machine, or you ask a book of records, or you ask a log, or you ask tables of navigation or something like that. But those cats, man, they just think another way. You know, they it's a whole nother way of thinking. That I think actually we've been, that's what we do all the time. That's what the Firesign Theater does with itself all the time, is it constantly sits around and examines where it's been, you know, that historical, that all that endless verbalizing we do about who we are. You know, what some people sneeringly call psychoanalysis is actually just a way of dead reckoning.
That's right. It exactly is.
My old lady and I consistently map our relationships with each other, talk constantly in retrospect, the way couples of people do when they've been together. They tend to talk about old times. I noticed that with my grandparents, man. And it's not just a boring thing. You're keeping track of where you've been, you know, and how far away you are from the points you remember, really. Because if you depend on books, man, and records, that's entertainment. It's not real to me, you know?
That would be like...
Sort of like a star.
Like saying, well, let's see, where were we at 20 years ago? You could either bring up something that happened to you, which is consciousness, or if you went back and read the history of the period, it wouldn't be the same thing.
No, because history is just words, entertaining things to play with, but not like saying, oh, yeah, that was the year that the cow died, or that was the year of the big frost, or you know, the way other peoples remember things.
Right.
Hey, Clem.
What?
Clem.
What?
Hey, the little sailor's the last guy.
Oh.
And he's weird with a beard, man.
Listen, I'm going to hitch our horses. We'll be ready to go.
No, no. Leave the horses in the wagon.
Yeah, yeah. It's all downhill from here.
Oh, look out. Look out. Here he is.
Ah! The bowls are clearing again. The right one is the sun, and the left one is the moon. Put what you want between them, and your future begins. Aha. I see you are a sail.
So here we are, the four three supposedly sophisticated boulevardiers and Marshall McLuhan. We weren't quite sure what Marshall's reaction would be. So we went into none of us had ever been to a topless restaurant. Herb Caen had been to topless, Carol Doda was the girl with the first show business silicone breasts. Had a striptease place nearby, but he had never been to the restaurant. So we walk into this restaurant. It's 12:30, the high noon time for lunch. The off Broadway was right in the Montgomery Streets section of San Francisco. That's the Wall Street of San Francisco. And here we suddenly found ourselves in a large restaurant in Stygian darkness, except for spotlights, which were picking out the waitresses. All of the customers were men, mostly from Montgomery Street, who seemed to be huddled together in these dark clothes, sort of like men in the back corner of a pornography store or something. And the lights only picked out the waitresses, who were clad, their complete clothing was what the French call a cache-sexe. We would probably call a G-string or a mini-thong, and spiked high heels. That was their entire... serving food. They were carrying these trays around, and always a spotlight. There must have been a dozen of them. A spotlight followed them wherever they went. So I looked to Caen, and then I looked to Gossage to try to see, you know, how do you get a take on all of this. They were like I was. They were both speechless, absolutely speechless. We were all in a state of shock, except for one of us, Marshall McLuhan. Immediately, I heard Marshall say, well, this is very interesting. It's very interesting. And so I said, what's interesting, Marshall? He said, they're wearing us. And I said, what do you mean they're wearing us? They're putting us on. And I thought that was the greatest a Joycean pun that I'd heard in a long time. They're putting us on.
And first I put my arms around him, yes, and drew her down to me so I could feel her breasts all perfumed, yes, and his heart was going like mad. And yes, I said, yes, I will. Yes, yes.
Thank you.
chains. You've shut the warning. Mother's farm. War good business, so give your son, and I'd rather have my country die for me.
And then he went, you know, we're a towel, or we're there a cloak, and we are completely at the service. These objects are walking around us. So we're finally seated, the waitress was a little. We're all still in a state of shock because the waitresses would lean over your shoulder with these pendulous breasts and give you your salad or your soup, whatever it might be. And at this point, I heard Marshall McLuhan say, you know, these dimly lit restaurants are not gustatory experience. It's the sense of taste that is being appealed to. He said, they're tactile. And I looked to see if he's smiling, but he wasn't. Not even the glimpse of a smile. Now began the fashion show that went on every day at lunchtime, in which the topless waitresses would put on lingerie mostly, and come walking through the restaurant, and there would be a patter given by a woman who seemed to be the master or mistress of ceremonies, yes. And she would say something like, "And now, here's Miss Stormy Labido, with an open lace chemise." And so here would come this young woman with these tremendous rouged appendices, with sort of jutting through these the open wear in the lake.
Why, without your cloak, you're naked, Miss Dudley. Miss Violet Dudley, isn't it?
How did you know my moniker?
From the other provocative initials on your knickers. And this scandalous article in tomorrow's time.
Let me see that. Farmer takes sprouts. Oh, no. Oh, he's Senator Soubrette found naked in detective's flat. But I'm not flat. Look.
Well, after a few of these had paraded by, Marshall McLuhan called over that was running the show. And he says, I have a little something for your ch- between, as the models come out. And she looked. She gave him a look as though this was some sort of wiseacre or just what. And he says, why don't you say that topless waitress is the opening wedge of the trial balloon? She gave him a skeptical look. She gave him a look. And then suddenly she looked like a ewe that had just been poleaxed in the back of the skull in the abattoir and sort of staggered away. So you can see, not all of Marshall's puns were necessarily funny or even remotely understandable. But things I learned from that had the ultimate poise of someone who is ready at any moment to bring the entire universe into his theoretical framework. That he did this with humor. His face never broke into the look of absolutely bottomless laughter. The face hardly ever changed remarkably, whether things were fun or otherwise.
You know, Peter Bergman and I, when we were touring, were invited to connect with Marshall McLuhan, mm-hmm. because he wanted to add more comedy to his lectures. And of course, we worship the man and his genius and foresight. And one time, I own this because so many of his predictions are still manifest, you know. But he invited us to his office. That's not the word they use. He's some English word up in Canada at the university that he was teaching at, all of which is in the distant future. I had to Google it. It was Google University up there, and his quarters. And we're in his chambers, and he's got a liveried servant there,
white,
but you know, dressed with the tails and you know, white gloves and everything. And he's serving us tea.
Remains of the day, just
yeah,
straight
yeah,
up.
The remains of, the remains of servitude, you know, and or colonialism. And then he brings out, because it's Canada, two Cuban cigars, or three Cuban cigars. And he gives Bergman from a safe that he's got there.
Wow.
And he gives his, and he lights them up. We're sitting there and talking. And all of a sudden, bang, bang, he planted loves in
Holy
them.
Shit. You have, oh my God.
So that's my fond memory of Marshall, who passed away soon thereafter from smoking Cuban cigars, I guess, and great loss.
He put the load on the wrong end.
Yeah, right. But you know, that's one of the people that you wish was still around, yeah. going like, "See, I told you so," or even like, "You ain't seen nothing yet," you know. but he's gone, and his son, Deputy McLuhan, my Marshall's son, he is keeping his dad's legacy alive by, or had been, by publishing stuff that he had written, comic stuff he'd written.